Okay, let's dive in. Imagine this. What if your office wasn't, a place you actually commuted to? What if it was more fluid, a strategy, really, one that lets you work from literally anywhere in the world?
Right, maintaining a top-tier career, but maybe your team thinks you're just, well, at your usual desk.
Exactly. And that's precisely what we're exploring today. Our deep dive is into Ed Rafe's book, The Complete Guide to Working from Everywhere. And let me tell you, Ed isn't just writing about this, he's out there living it.
He really is. He's built this whole global brand around it, hasn't he? Taking his experiences at these over 100 countries and turning them into, well, marketable stories, courses, the whole package.
Yeah, his websites, peterif.com and the others, his YouTube channel, they're not just places he puts stuff. They're like the engine room for everything. His books, these digital courses he's developing, like the Mindful Adventurer's Playbook, speaking gigs, even brand partnerships.
Which is why this book feels different. It's not just abstract ideas. It feels grounded in real, lived adventure that he's somehow distilled into a workable professional life.
And that's what makes the source material here so compelling, right? We're focusing today on the foundations, specifically the foreword and the table of contents of his book, because that's where he lays out this honestly kind of revolutionary philosophy and his very, very practical approach.
Absolutely. It sets the stage for the whole system he unveils later.
So, our mission today, pretty clear, I think. We want to get past all the hype, the Instagram pictures of laptops on beaches,
The
and
myths.
really dig into the strategies, the mindset, the actual work that makes truly location-independent work not just a possibility, but something sustainable, something powerful. We're going to unpack how Rafe turns these wild adventures into a serious, thriving career. Okay, so Rafe definitely doesn't bury the lead. Right there in the foreword, bang. The office is dead. It just doesn't know it yet. Yeah. That's not exactly easing us in, is it?
No, not at all. It's a bold claim, and it's meant to be provocative, I think.
Yeah.
But it's much deeper than just saying, oh, more people are working from home.
Right, it feels bigger than that.
It is. He's signaling a fundamental shift, a paradigm shift, really, in how we even define work, how we think about professional presence, and crucially, where value actually comes from in a business or creative setting.
So it's challenging the whole structure.
Exactly. Those traditional corporate setups built on presenteeism, the idea that just being physically there, being seen at your desk equals productivity or commitment, Rafe is saying that's completely outdated.
He argues the conventional office, it kind of dictates everything, where you work, when you work, even how you approach it.
Precisely. And his vision flips that. The office becomes, as he says, a state of mind. It's about having this disciplined mental framework, a set of principles, a really organized system that lets you operate at your best wherever you happen to be.
It's moving work from a place to an activity.
An adaptable activity.
Yeah, and he gives this amazing visual right away to back it up. He calls it the Gibraltar Revelation. Paints this picture. He's in a small cafe in Gibraltar, Mediterranean sun, actually looking across the water at Morocco. And he's about to jump on a video call with his team back in California. And he notes they'll just see his familiar home office background, same wall, same lighting, the same Ed they always see.
Even though he's, what, 5,000 miles away, having coffee next to some retired British guy?
Right. And he calls this professional invisibility. But here's the kicker, the distinction he makes. This isn't deception, it's evolution. Okay, but for a lot of managers, that would sound like deception. How does he square that circle? How do you justify evolution over hiding?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And the distinction is absolutely critical. He's very clear. He's not talking about being dishonest or, dodging work.
Okay.
The deception idea implies he's hiding something that actually affects his work quality or his team. But his argument is, well, his physical location is basically irrelevant to his output.
So the evolution part is.
The evolution is moving past this totally outdated idea that physical closeness somehow equals productivity or trust or even engagement. It's about shifting the entire focus away from where you physically are.
To what you actually produce.
Exactly. The tangible value, the consistent results. His team in California, they get the same professional ed, the same high-quality work consistently. They don't need the coordinates of his cafe. They need the project delivered on time to standard.
And he emphasizes this isn't just a thought experiment. He says he pulled this off while maintaining not one, but two successful remote careers
I
simultaneously.
know. It's pretty staggering when you think about it. The sheer level of organization, the discipline, the strategic focus needed for that. all while bouncing between Cape Town sunrises, Shetland storms, Vegas poker tables, even cruise ships.
It just underlines that this philosophy isn't just about the cool travel aspect. It's about the practical reality of delivering consistently, no matter what the background looks like.
Yeah, the how.
Which brings us straight to that other story he tells, the Lagos light bulb moment. He's in Lagos, Portugal this time, enjoying the sunshine. And a recruiter from Boeing calls him. He mentions he works remotely. And her voice apparently drops to this whisper asking, "Oh, do you have that thing with the mouse? The one that moves so you can do other stuff."
Oh, wow. Yeah, that says a lot, doesn't it?
It really does. What's the deeper truth that clicked for Rafe in that moment?
Well, it's just such a stark reminder of how deeply ingrained that old school workplace thinking still is, even for someone recruiting for, you know, modern roles.
Her immediate assumption was slacking off.
Pretty much. Mm. Her question reveals this underlying belief that remote work automatically equals finding ways to look busy, faking activity instead of actually producing results.
Mm.
Her mental model is all about time spent, maybe activity displayed, not outcomes achieved.
Input versus output.
Exactly. For her, it's about measuring input.
Mm.
But Reeve sees this as a crucial clarifying moment. He draws this sharp line, he says, between jobs that measure time, maybe like that customer service role she might be thinking of, where constant availability is key.
Right, where mouse movement might actually crudely mean something.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are jobs that measure outcomes. Like his role as an instructional systems designer, his value isn't how long his team's status is green. It's in the complex systems he designs, the strategies he develops, the learning experiences he delivers. It's the tangible stuff.
And he doesn't mince words about it either. He says, point blank, if your remote culture depends on tracking mouse movement instead of trusting people to deliver, I'm not interested.
That's a strong stance.
That is.
But what about those roles where availability is critical, or companies that genuinely are struggling with performance? Is his philosophy a one-size-fits-all, or does it need a certain kind of high-trust culture to even begin?
That's a really important nuance.
Yeah.
And he does acknowledge that distinction. He's not saying every single job on the planet can be done this way.
Okay.
But what he is saying, very clearly, is that for knowledge work roles driven by creativity, problem-solving, strategic thinking,
yeah,
the focus has to shift to outcomes. If a company's struggling with performance, spying on mouse movements isn't the answer.
So what is?
Clear expectations. Better project management, real accountability focused on deliverables, not just activity. His statement really boils down to his core belief.
Mm.
Remote work isn't about being constantly visible. It's about being consistently valuable.
Consistently valuable. I like that.
And that principle underpins everything else. It means trust, clear communication, transparency, and this rigorous focus on measurable results become absolutely central. You have to shift from that input mindset, how many hours logged, how busy do you look, to an output mindset. What do you actually accomplish? What value did you create today? It's a fundamental shift for anyone wanting to make this work.
Okay, so with those core ideas laid out, output over optics, professional invisibility, it's really clear Rafe isn't just selling some, you know, glamorous travel dream.
No, far from it.
In fact, he dives straight into what he calls the remote work reality check. He wants to separate the myths from the actual truth. He really tries to cut through that perfect Instagram version of remote life.
Yeah, the laptop by the pool fantasy.
Exactly. He reminds us it's not a vacation, it's a shift in responsibility. And I love this imagery. It's emails and deadlines, just with better coffee and the occasional cat cameo. That just grounds it instantly, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And it's so important because the popular image, the one curated for social media, it's often miles away from the day-to-day reality of getting actual work done.
He says remote work doesn't remove stress, it redistributes it. That feels really insightful.
It's profound, I think, and often totally missed. You might lose the stress of the daily commute, sure, or dealing with annoying office politics face to face.
Thank goodness for that sometimes.
Right. But you gain new stressors, like the intense self-discipline needed, the constant battle to set boundaries between work and life when they're in the same physical space, maintaining professional ties without those casual chats, managing distractions, kids, pets, the fridge.
The fridge is a powerful distraction.
Isn't it just? What Instagram doesn't show is the genuine video call fatigue he mentions, or the blurred lines when your office is also your bedroom, or just the focused, sometimes quite lonely, effort it takes to stay connected and productive without that built-in office structure. The copy might be nicer, yeah, but the deadlines are just as real.
He also points out the shared realities between working in an office and working remotely, which I found kind of comforting, actually. Like, not muting your mic is the new reply all.
Huh. It's perfect, isn't it? It shows how those basic human professional dynamics, they don't just vanish when you change location. The challenges just morph.
Right. He compares Zoom fashion, you know, business on top, pajamas on the bottom.
I've all been there.
To wearing sneakers under the conference table in the office. It's the same impulse, just a different context, finding that little bit of personal comfort.
Exactly. And you still find those small comforts in both places, right? Maybe it's your pet snoozing nearby at home, or grabbing a coffee with a colleague in the office you swap rush hour traffic for, maybe waiting for the kettle to boil.
Or endless elevator waits.
Yeah. And universally, no matter where you are, you still get stuck in those meetings that you just know should have been an email.
Oh, the dreaded meeting that should have been an email, a global constant.
It really is. And these parallels are important. They strip away the fantasy and show that remote work, fundamentally, it's still work. It takes effort, strategy, discipline. Same as always, just different logistics.
So based on all this, his experiences, these observations, he distills what he calls the truth about remote work. Let's unpack his key learnings. First one, productivity depends on purpose, not physical location.
Yeah, this goes right back to challenging that presenteeism idea. He's arguing that someone deeply focused, producing great results from, say, a noisy cafe in Lisbon, someone whose work is driven by clear purpose and goals, is way more productive than someone just warming a seat in an office, maybe scrolling through social media.
It makes sense. The key factor is internal, not external.
Exactly. It's about focus, motivation, having clear objectives, not about the coordinates of your chair. In fact, the office itself can sometimes be a massive distraction from purpose, right? A place where looking busy can sometimes trump actually creating value.
Okay, and linked to that, he says, remote workers aren't lazy, results speak louder than routines. He actually says they're often obsessively reliable.
That feels counterintuitive to the stereotype.
It absolutely does, but it's so crucial for building trust in remote teams. His point is that remote workers often feel this intense sense of accountability. Why? Because they don't have that constant physical visibility.
Right, no one sees them looking busy.
Precisely. So their actual results, their output, that's their reputation. There's no leaning on looking diligent around the water cooler. They know their deliverables are the primary way they show their value and keep their job secure. So often they go the extra mile to make sure things are done well and on time. They become obsessively reliable because their career literally depends on it. Their work has to speak for itself. Okay, next. Flexibility doesn't mean a lack of discipline. That sounds like a trap many fall into.
Oh, it's a huge one. And it's a truth many learn the hard way. Real, sustainable flexibility in remote work demands more discipline, not less. Think about it. Without the external scaffolding of an office set hours, colleagues around, managers watching, fixed lunch breaks, you have to provide that structure internally.
You have to be your own boss, essentially.
In a very real sense, yes. You need the discipline to set clear boundaries, create effective routines, and actually stick to them. Manage your time like a hawk and fight off all those unique distractions at home or in a new place. It's about proactive self-management, not just reacting to external rules.
Which leads to his point. Every day isn't Friday. It's work with fewer boundaries. That sounds like that double-edged sword you mentioned.
It perfectly captures it. The freedom from the 9-to-5 prison or being tied to one desk, it can feel incredibly liberating. You can work when you're sharpest, fit in appointments, maybe structure your day around exploring a new city. That's the upside.
But the downside.
The downside is, if you don't consciously manage those fewer boundaries, work can just seep into everything, every hour, every space. And that's a fast track to burnout. It takes real, intentional effort to carve out and protect personal time, especially if your living room is your office or if you're juggling time zones.
And he's also really direct about the downside of loneliness and isolation are real challenges. We hear this a lot now, don't we?
We do. And it's vital he acknowledges it. It's probably one of the most overlooked aspects, especially if you only see the shiny Instagram version, the lack of those spontaneous chats, the easy camaraderie of being physically together.
Yeah.
It can lead to genuine feelings of isolation for some people.
And the video call fatigue he mentions is definitely real.
Oh, absolutely. Staring at faces on a screen all day can be weirdly draining, sometimes more so than being in person. It takes deliberate, proactive work to keep professional relationships strong and build new ones when you're remote. You have to be intentional about virtual team events, or maybe make an effort to find local co-working spots or communities wherever you land.
Okay, and the final point in this reality check. Remote work gives you autonomy, not freedom from accountability. In fact, he claims you're more accountable because your work has to speak for itself. More accountable. That's bold.
It is bold, but it circles right back to that core principle. Output trumps optics. When you're not physically there to be seen, your work, your tangible results, your contributions becomes the only evidence of your effort and value.
No hiding behind looking busy.
None at all. You get more autonomy over how and when you do things, yes.
Hmm.
But that freedom comes packaged with increased accountability for the results, your finished projects, your clear communication, your impact on team goals. That's the undeniable proof of your performance. It creates a kind of meritocracy based purely on what you deliver.
Okay, so we've had the reality check. Let's swing back to the core philosophy driving Rafe's whole system. He has this whole section called The Foundation, Philosophy, and Mindset. And chapter one, same title as before, The Office is Dead. It just doesn't know it yet. We touched on it, but how does he really flesh this out as a foundational idea? It feels less like commentary now, more like a strategic imperative.
It absolutely is framed as a strategic imperative, not just a trend, but a fundamental, probably irreversible shift in how we perceive work's relationship to place. It's saying the physical, centralized office as the main hub of productivity, increasingly obsolete in our connected world.
And there's an advantage to getting on board early.
Huge advantage, he argues. For companies, it means accessing a global talent pool, potentially slashing overheads, improving retention by offering flexibility people crave. For individuals, it's freedom from geographic ties, the chance to design a more integrated life. It's about recognizing that talent and productivity aren't locked inside specific buildings anymore. They're in the minds of skilled people wherever they are.
And the cost of not adapting.
Being left behind. Struggling to attract top talent. Missing out on efficiencies. It's presented as adapting to the inevitable future of knowledge work.
And central to making this leap is the art of professional invisibility. We saw the Gibraltar example team sees the home office background. He's miles away. But how does this level up to a mastery, as he calls it later in the book? What's involved beyond just a good background image?
Right. Professional invisibility mastery isn't just about fooling people with a nice background. It's about cultivating this virtual presence that's so consistently professional, so effective, that your actual physical location just becomes a non-issue. It fades into irrelevance for your colleagues and managers.
So involved.
It involves deliberate production design, as he puts it. Consistent lighting, crystal clear audio, a professional camera angle projecting focus. But deeper than that, it's mastering how you manage your online signals, like your status indicators, so they reliably show active engagement without needing you to be physically chained to a desk. And most importantly, it's about building such deep, implicit trust through your consistently high-quality work that people just know you're delivering, period. They stop even wondering where you are. It shifts the question from the superficial, are they there, to the meaningful, is the work getting done exceptionally well? It's a subtle but powerful way to control your professional narrative.
And this all feeds back into the absolute bedrock principle, output trumps optics. Seems like everything rests on this.
It is the non-negotiable foundation. Everything flows from this. What you produce, tangible results, contributions, finished projects, is infinitely more valuable than how you appear to be working or how much time you seem to be putting in.
Getting away from seat time as a metric.
Completely.
Mm-hmm.
Moving from optics, being seen, looking busy, physical presence, to output, delivering real measurable value, isn't just a nice idea. He frames it as the key performance indicator for the future of work. Organizations brave enough to build a truly results-driven culture around this. They're the ones who will win the talent war and thrive. And for individuals, it empowers you to prove your worth through your actual work, freeing everyone from outdated, frankly unproductive surveillance habits. It's the essential metric.
Okay, so then he introduces the four pillars of stealth working. The foreword doesn't spell them out, but based on everything we've heard, the philosophy, the anecdotes, what do you think those pillars have to cover? What would be the core components?
Right, speculating based on the context. Yeah. These pillars would be the practical framework holding up the whole philosophy. I guess they must include something like, first, pillar one, self-management and discipline. This has to be foundational. Mastering your own time, prioritizing ruthlessly, setting boundaries, maintaining focus without a boss watching. Think deep work habits, structured routines even when traveling, creating that internal structure.
Makes sense. What else?
Second, pillar two, robust communication excellence. And this is more than just answering emails quickly. It's mastering asynchronous communication, collaborating effectively even when you're not online at the same time. Crystal clear writing, proactive updates, managing expectations across time zones, over-communicating strategically, maybe.
Okay, two down.
Third, pillar three, technical proficiency and redundancy. This means mastering the tools, obviously, but also ensuring you have a rock-solid secure tech setup wherever you are. Laptop, software, fast internet. And crucially, backups, backup internet, backup power, digital security, VPNs, all that stuff.
Practical nuts and bolts.
Absolutely essential nuts and bolts. And fourth, I suspect pillar four, strategic environment, time zone leverage, and admin savvy. This would be about choosing locations wisely for productivity and well-being, using time differences smartly. And crucially, this is where that home of record strategy likely fits in. Having that stable, legal, and administrative base address for tax, banking, etc., even if you're rarely there. Because without that admin anchor, the whole thing falls apart legally and financially. Those four pillars seem like the logical structure to turn the idea into reality.
Yeah, and it's so clear Rafe isn't just making this stuff up. He dedicates a whole part of the book to the personal journey, learning from experience. Chapter 5 is titled Overemployed and Overdelivering, and he flat out says he juggled not one but two successful remote careers simultaneously while traveling. That's honestly hard to fathom.
It is. It suggests an extraordinary level of organization, doesn't it? And discipline. And strategic thinking. Just managing one remote job effectively is a challenge for many people.
So how does someone even do that?
Well, it implies mastery of time management on a whole other level. Ruthless prioritization. Maybe finding synergies between the roles. And absolutely flawless communication, you'd imagine, to ensure nothing gets dropped. He must treat his time and capacity almost like a CEO manages resources.
It sounds intense.
Extremely intense, I'd guess. Probably means sacrificing some downtime that others might value. But for him, clearly, the payoff, that freedom dividend he talks about, makes that trade-off worthwhile.
And a key technique seems to be using time zones as a superpower. How does that work in practice? Because usually time zones are just a pain, right? Scheduling meetings across them.
They usually are a pain. But he shows how you can flip them into an advantage. Take his Gibraltar, California example again. There's roughly a 9-hour difference. Huge headache potential. But he could leverage it. Maybe use his early Gibraltar morning when California is still asleep for deep, focused work on complex stuff. No interruptions. Then shift into collaborative mode. Meetings during the overlap hours, his late afternoon, their morning. Then maybe use his evening to wrap up, plan, or even connect with people in yet another time zone.
So it creates distinct blocks for different kinds of work.
Exactly. Concentrated flow state time, efficient collaboration time. It allows for a non-linear workday that actually maximizes productivity and allows him to integrate travel and life without dropping the ball professionally. It's strategic temporal arbitrage, almost.
I love how he calls his travels location laboratories. It makes it sound so methodical, like he's actively experimenting. Let's look at a few. Cape Town, the perfect storm of conditions. What makes Cape Town a perfect storm for someone like him?
Cape Town likely offered this amazing combination. You've got the lifestyle appeal, stunning nature, culture, food, a growing nomad scene for networking. Then, probably reliable infrastructure, good internet, etc. Plus, a relatively favorable cost of living compared to Europe or the U.S.
And the time zone.
The time zone's pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Decent overlap with Europe, even workable for the U.S. East Coast. So it hits that sweet spot. High quality of life, good connectivity, reasonable cost, and manageable time differences. A place where work feels integrated, not like a sacrifice.
Then contrast that with Shetland. Endurance at the edge of the world. That sounds challenging. What's the lesson there?
Shetland would test a completely different muscle set, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Resilience, self-reliance, adaptability in potentially harsh conditions. Edge of the world suggests connectivity might be spotty, weather could be disruptive. It's physically isolated.
So the lab here is testing.
Testing focus in isolation. Testing self-motivation without external buzz. Testing technical redundancy plans when things inevitably go wrong. It would force deep work habits, hone mental toughness, problem solving. It's about proving the system works, even when the environment is actively working against you, pushing the limit.
He also mentions a specific move, strategic transition from France to Gibraltar. Why that particular shift? Sounds deliberate.
Very deliberate, I'd assume. It suggests a calculated move to optimize his operational base. Could be better, more reliable internet. Could be significantly better tax implications. That stuff matters hugely for long-term sustainability. Could be strategic positioning. Gibraltar is English-speaking, British territory, close to Europe and Africa. Maybe better for his U.S. connections. It's likely a conscious choice based on a matrix of factors that make his borderless operation smoother, more efficient, or more profitable.
And then Andalusia, Granada and Marbella adventures. This sounds more like the dream scenario, combining work with really rich cultural immersion.
Absolutely. Southern Spain offers that perfect blend. Granada's history, the Alhambra, the culture, Marbella's coastline, climate, more cosmopolitan feel. Working from places like these would be the ultimate test of integration. Can you seamlessly weave demanding professional work into a life filled with exploration, new foods, vibrant local life? It proves the model isn't just about sterile efficiency. It's about enabling a richer, fuller life while maintaining a career. Synergy, not sacrifice.
Then he lands on winter in Gibraltar, finding the perfect base. What elevates a place from a location laboratory to a perfect base, especially for something long-term like wintering, it can't just be the weather.
No, definitely not just sunshine. A perfect base needs a whole package. Rock-solid infrastructure is non-negotiable. Fast, reliable internet, stable power, good workspaces available. Cost of living needs to be sustainable long-term. A decent community, whether expat or local, is vital for staving off isolation. Ease of travel in and out and a convenient time zone for your main work are key. And critically, a stable legal and tax environment. Gibraltar seems to tick those boxes for him. English-speaking, strategic location, UK framework, it becomes a reliable hub.
Which brings us neatly to West Sussex, the home of Record Strategy. You mentioned this earlier. What exactly does this strategy entail for taxes, legal stuff, admin? This feels like the really unsexy but crucial part.
It is absolutely the unsexy but utterly essential backbone. A home of record strategy means establishing one fixed legal address that serves as your official base for everything administrative, even if you spend hardly any time there. Taxes, banking, receiving official mail, maybe healthcare registration, business registration.
So West Sussex is his anchor point.
Exactly. Using a place like West Sussex in the UK likely gives him a stable, predictable legal and tax system to operate within. It simplifies everything massively. Trying to manage taxes and banking across multiple countries while constantly moving is a logistical nightmare and a legal minefield. A solid home of record provides that crucial administrative stability that allows the rest of the nomadic freedom to actually work long term. Without it, the whole borderless structure is built on shaky ground.
Okay, this next bit feels like a paradox. We've talked a lot about professional invisibility in the day-to-day, yet Reef dedicates a whole section to the conference circuit, professional visibility. Why is this kind of strategic, intentional visibility so important if the goal is often to be invisible?
It's a great question, and it highlights a really key distinction. The day-to-day invisibility is about making your physical location irrelevant. Strategic visibility, like at conferences, is about making sure your expertise, your value, and who you are professionally are very much relevant and recognized.
Ah, okay. Different kinds of visibility.
Exactly. For someone working remotely, especially borderlessly, you miss out on all those informal office interactions, the hallway chats, the lunch discussions where ideas spark and connections are made. So, intentional high-impact visibility at key industry events becomes crucial.
Why specifically?
It's how you network strategically at scale, build your personal brand, discover new opportunities, projects, partnerships, maybe even jobs, stay plugged into industry trends, cement your reputation as a thought leader. Especially for someone like Rafe, whose model includes brand partnerships, conferences are prime territory for making those connections. It amplifies the impact of his otherwise invisible daily work. It's about being known for your expertise, even if you're not seen every day.
Okay, that makes sense. He lists some specific experiences. Los Angeles and Las Vegas, the DevLearn experiment. DevLearn is big in the learning tech space, right? What does experiment suggest here?
Yeah, DevLearn is a major event for his field, instructional systems design. Calling it an experiment suggests he's not just going there to passively attend sessions. He's likely actively testing something. Maybe testing how effectively he can network as a borderless professional in that setting. Maybe validating some of his remote work strategies by discussing them with peers. Perhaps using it to showcase his expertise in a live context to attract new clients or collaborators for his courses.
So using the conference as another lab.
Exactly. Observing trends, seeing how his personal brand lands in person, gathering specific intel. It's about active engagement to extract strategic value, not just collect brochures.
Then London tech gatherings. Home field advantage. Why emphasize a home field for someone who works from everywhere?
Having a home field like London, especially if it aligns with his UK home of record, provides a valuable anchor point. It means tapping into an established network, a familiar environment. It reduces the friction and cost of constant travel to entirely new places. He can maintain key relationships more easily, explore local opportunities within a major tech hub, and participate in that ecosystem without the overhead of being a complete newcomer every time. It's about cultivating strategic strongholds within his global network.
Okay, and this one just sounds wild. The cruise ship experiment, ultimate remote testing. My first thought is the internet. How? What makes a cruise ship the ultimate test, and what skills get honed there?
Seems like potential remote work hell.
Ha. Huh. It does sound like a nightmare scenario for connectivity, doesn't it? But that's precisely why it's the ultimate test. Cruise ships inherently throw up huge challenges. The internet is often notoriously unreliable, slow, and expensive. You've got limited personal space. And you have intense, unique distractions everywhere. Constant entertainment, food, a confined social bubble.
So what's being tested? Everything. Your self-discipline amidst constant temptation, your resourcefulness in dealing with terrible connectivity planning work meticulously around intermittent access, your ability to create a productive routine in a tiny moving cabin. It's an extreme stress test for your system redundancy plans phase 5, your problem-solving skills under pressure, your communication clarity when bandwidth is low, and definitely your emotional control. If you can consistently deliver high-quality work from the middle of the ocean on a cruise ship, well, you've proven you can probably handle almost anything, anywhere. It validates the entire system under extreme duress.
Right, so it's really clear this isn't just luck or winging it. Rafe lays out a very systematic plan. He calls it the complete stealth working playbook, and it's broken down into specific timed phases.
Exactly. And that systematic approach is what really elevates this beyond just working remotely into a strategic work from everywhere capability. It acknowledges this isn't something you just switch on overnight. It takes deliberate planning, building skills step by step, implementing things in phases, like any major professional development.
It provides a roadmap.
A clear, methodical roadmap to achieving what might seem like a very spontaneous lifestyle.
Okay, let's walk through some of these phases based on his table of contents. Phase 1, strategic foundation. He budgets 2 to 4 weeks. What's happening here? What's the foundation?
This first phase sounds like it's all about deep self-reflection and careful preparation. Mm-hmm. Doing a real assessment. What are my skills? What are my career goals? What kind of work is actually suited to this model? Setting clear personal and professional objectives for making this massive shift.
And practical stuff, too.
Oh, absolutely. The initial tech setup is key here. Getting the right laptop, essential software, secure communication tools. Defining your non-negotiable tech needs for any location. It's like packing your essential gear before a major expedition, doing the internal and external groundwork for success.
Okay. Then phase 2, professional and visibility mastery, 3-4 weeks. We've touched on this, but what are the specific techniques beyond the virtual background? How do you actually master this?
This phase dives deep into crafting and maintaining that seamless virtual presence. So yes, perfecting the consistent background, the lighting, the audio, the production design, but also learning how to strategically manage your online presence indicators, Slack status, Teams availability so they signal engagement without requiring constant real-time activity.
Managing the signals.
Exactly. Right. And the core of it. Building such profound trust through consistently excellent work that your location just becomes irrelevant. Your output is your presence. It's about cultivating a reputation that transcends geography. That's the mastery.
Phase 3, communication excellence, 2-3 weeks. In this borderless world, across time zones, using digital tools, how does communication need to change? You said hyper-intentional before.
Hyper-intentional is the perfect description. Communication is the absolute lifeblood here. This phase focuses on mastering asynchronous communication, being able to collaborate effectively even if you're not online at the same time.
Which requires
crystal clear writing. Messages need to be concise, unambiguous, easily understood without immediate clarification. Proactive updates are vital, letting people know progress, managing expectations about response times if you're in a different zone, and knowing which tool to use when email for documentation, chat for quick queries, video for complex discussion. It requires real discipline to avoid misinterpretation.
Okay. Phase 4, information control mastery, 2-3 weeks. This sounds like security and privacy, super important when you're mobile.
Absolutely paramount. This phase is all about rock-solid digital hygiene, cybersecurity, and efficient data management. Ensuring secure access to company systems, using reliable cloud storage, having robust data backup strategies. Knowing how to handle sensitive information securely when you're potentially working from a cafe or co-working space using VPNs, strong passwords, multi-factor authentication. It's about keeping your data and your company's data safe, accessible, and compliant no matter where your laptop happens to be. Essential for maintaining trust.
Phase 5, system redundancy and resilience. 3-4 weeks. This sounds like planning for everything that could possibly go wrong, the ultimate safety net.
It's exactly that, and it's non-negotiable for making this sustainable. This is where you build comprehensive backup plans for everything critical. Multiple ways to get online main Wi-Fi, mobile hotspot, local SIM, maybe even a co-working pass just in case. Power banks for devices, backup hardware maybe.
And crisis plans. His appendices mentioned those.
Right. Establishing protocols for unexpected events, major internet outages, power cuts, hardware failure, even personal emergencies in unfamiliar places. How do you ensure minimal disruption to your work? It's about building resilience into your workflow so you can adapt quickly and keep delivering, anticipating the unexpected and having a plan B, C, and D.
Then phase six, performance amplification for 6 weeks. So moving beyond just coping to actually performing better, how does that work?
Performance amplification here is about strategically using the flexibility you've gained to maximize your output and quality. Understanding your own peak productivity times and scheduling demanding work then, regardless of the clock. Creating those sacred deep work blocks. Using time zones cleverly, as we discussed, for focused work or extended team coverage. And critically, it involves continuous learning and skill development, always enhancing your value, because your results are everything. It's about designing your work patterns for peak performance, not just maintaining the status quo.
And finally, phase seven, advanced integration and mastery, listed as ongoing, the long game.
Exactly. This is where it all becomes second nature. It's about continuous refinement, integrating all these systems and principles so seamlessly you barely think about them. Constantly adapting to new tools, new methods, regularly reassessing your systems and goals to avoid burnout or complacency. And crucially, maintaining that balance, ensuring the freedom dividend truly enhances your life without letting work consume everything or letting your skills stagnate. It's a commitment to ongoing dynamic evolution. #7, mastering the invisible arts and the psychology of remote work.
Okay, let's dig into some of these invisible arts. Chapter 24, the background game, production design for professionals. This is definitely more than just tidy your room before a call, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's strategic communication through visuals. Creating that consistent professional set for your virtual self serves two key purposes. First, minimize distractions for others. Keep their focus on your message. Second, maintain that stable, reliable, professional image, no matter if you're actually in your designated home office or, like Reef in Gibraltar, a bustling cafe.
So the consistent background hides the location variance.
Precisely. It could be a specific virtual background, consistent lighting setups, ensuring no random elements, pets, family members wander into the frame. It's about controlling the visual narrative, making sure your background reinforces your professionalism, doesn't undermine it. A core piece of that, invisibility.
He also talks about load sharing and crisis management. How do you handle workload surges or unexpected crises when you're potentially on the other side of the planet from your team?
It requires incredibly proactive systems. Strategic delegation is key, knowing what you can hand off. Having crystal clear escalation paths agreed upon in advance for different types of issues, and deep anticipatory planning. If you know you'll have limited connectivity next week, you communicate that early, delegate time-sensitive tasks, ensure others have access to critical info.
Those crisis management protocols in the appendices probably detail this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Plans for internet failure, power outages, hardware dying, even personal emergencies. How do you minimize work disruption? It's about building resilience and communication protocols so the team can adapt and cover, turning potential disasters into manageable hiccups.
Then there's chapter 27, What I Learned About Time. Sounds like he has a different relationship with time than the standard 9-to-5er.
Definitely. His perspective seems to go way beyond just scheduling. It emphasizes identifying and fiercely protecting time for deep work, those long stretches of focused concentration where the real breakthroughs happen, achieving flow states, leveraging your natural energy cycles, working when you're sharpest, not just when the clock says you should.
And that quote, keep some weekend in your weekdays, your work will thank you. What's that about?
It encapsulates this philosophy beautifully. It suggests integrating breaks, relaxation, hobbies, even small adventures into the work week itself. Recognizing that a refreshed, balanced mind is ultimately more productive, more creative. It's designing your use of time for holistic well-being and peak performance, not just cramming in hours.
Okay. And maybe the most intriguing title, The Poker Player's Guide to Remote Work. Wow, what's the connection? Poker and remote work.
It's fascinating, isn't it? It hints at a very sophisticated psychological approach. Poker is all about strategic decisions with incomplete information, right? Reading opponents, tells, managing risk, understanding probabilities, and maintaining serious emotional control under pressure.
So, applied to remote work.
Maybe it's about reading virtual tells, picking up nuances in emails or Slack messages, understanding team dynamics without body language, managing professional risks, taking on projects, negotiating, making career moves, understanding the odds, and crucially, that emotional control, staying cool under pressure when you're working alone and the stakes feel high. It suggests approaching your remote career with a calculated, resilient, adaptive mindset, playing the long game strategically. #, #take 8, the borderless future and sustainable freedom.
Looking ahead, Rafe talks about the borderless future of work. What's his big picture vision? Where is this all heading globally?
His vision seems to be that location independence evolves from being a niche thing for digital nomads to becoming a mainstream reality across many more industries and roles. A future where physical location is increasingly irrelevant to professional value.
Leading to
a truly global talent market. Companies hire the best person, period, regardless of zip code. Individuals access opportunities previously locked away by geography. This could mean more high-value jobs in developing regions, talent spreading out from overcrowded cities, maybe more flexible, human-centric approach to work-life balance overall.
What are the societal implications?
Potentially huge. Reshaping cities, transport, maybe even social structures as more people prioritize lifestyle mobility, fostering innovation in new places, democratizing access to skills and opportunities. It's a pretty transformative vision.
But making it last, building a sustainable practice, beyond the initial setup, what does that take long term? It sounds exhausting if you're not careful.
Sustainability is key. And you're right. It requires constant vigilance. It hinges on continuous adaptation, mental resilience, and those robust systems we talked about, especially phase 5, redundancy and resilience. Always refining your approach, keeping up with tech, reassessing goals to avoid burnout or just drifting. And critically, maintaining those backup plans for when things inevitably go sideways. It's not set it and forget it. It's ongoing, dynamic maintenance and conscious design.
The ultimate prize for all this effort, he calls the freedom dividend, lifestyle integration. How does working from everywhere actually integrate life and work instead of making them fight each other?
The freedom dividend is that profound alignment. It's when your professional life actively enables your deepest personal values and aspirations. Travel, family time, hobbies, learning, whatever drives you. You get to intentionally choose where and how you live and design your work around that, not the other way around. For Reef, his work clearly fuels his passion for travel and storytelling. It's about creating synergy, where your job amplifies your life rather than competing with it. That's the ultimate integration.
And lastly, staying sharp. Professional development in a location-independent world. Without an office structure, how do you keep growing?
Professional development becomes intensely self-directed. You can't rely on the company sending you on a course or learning through office osmosis. Reef likely uses a mix. Online courses like his own playbook, niche, online communities, virtual conferences, discipline self-study, actively seeking out new skills, staying plugged into industry trends online, strategic networking. His line, imagination is the fuel that makes remote work limitless, fits perfectly here. You have the freedom and the responsibility to design your own learning path, totally unbound by physical location. #, #outrace.
Well, that was quite the deep dive into Ed Rafe's The Complete Guide to Working from Everywhere. We've really unpacked his core ideas, shifting from optics to output, the power of strategic invisibility, and this incredibly detailed, phased playbook for making location independence a reality.
Yeah, and what comes through so strongly is that this is absolutely not about taking it easy or being on a permanent holiday. It's real work done differently. As you said, it demands incredible discipline, meticulous planning, and this unwavering focus on results.
It's about leveraging technology, sure, but just as much about cultivating a specific mindset and intentionally designing your entire life around this way of working.
Absolutely. It's a holistic system.
You know, Reef doesn't just share theories. He embodies them. He lives these stories, distills the lessons, and offers them as a potential blueprint. Which leaves us, and you listening, with a thought. If your work could truly speak for itself, if your output was undeniably your reputation, what assumptions about being present could you maybe let go of? How might you redesign your next chapter?
What would your own location laboratory look like? What might you discover about your own focus, your own purpose, if you stepped outside the conventional structures?
It's a compelling question. As Reef suggests, maybe when all the external noise fades, the expectations, the assumptions, your own voice, your own intuition becomes the most reliable guide for crafting a professional life that's truly effective and deeply fulfilling wherever you choose to be.